This is the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah and with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice. "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one was with them anymore, but only Jesus. And they were coming down the mountain. He ordered them to tell no one what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. This is the Gospel of the Lord. Grace and peace to you from Jesus Christ, whom we proclaim. Today we celebrate the Transfiguration, a story we hear every year before we begin our journey into Lent. This year, as I've asked myself what it speaks to us in this world of Zoom and virtual backgrounds and filters, the idea of changing figure or form isn't so crazy to us anymore. And I couldn't help but wonder if the lawyer who showed up to a virtual case as a cat this week might have something to teach us.
Mr. Ponton, I believe you have a filter turned on in the video settings. You might want to
can you hear me, Judge?
I can hear you. I think it's a filter.
It is, and I don't know how to remove it. I've got my assistant here. She's trying to, but I'm prepared to go forward with it. I'm here live. I'm not a cat.
And yet, alas, the line from the story that has continued to call out to me and to grab my attention this week is not one that makes the cat have something to teach us, but is the fact that upon seeing the Transfiguration happen before their eyes, the disciples are terrified. This past week, the confirmation students and myself finished our unit studying the Ten Commandments. And if you've spent any time reading Martin Luther's explanation of the Ten Commandments in the Small Catechism, you'll know that he always begins with the phrase, "We are to fear and love God." This phrase has sparked a lot of conversation for us in our Ten Commandment unit about how the word fear does not always mean being scared of, but that it also might mean having a reverence for, or a deep respect for, or to be in awe of something. Sometimes, however, I think we experience both understandings or meanings of the word fear at the same time. And I think that's what's happening for the disciples in our story of the Transfiguration. As Mark begins telling this story, he starts by writing 6 days later, which made me wonder what happened 6 days before. So I went back and read the end of chapter 8 and discovered that the disciples are likely terrified because Jesus has just told them for the first time that he must suffer and be rejected and die before rising again 3 days later. This means that their whole understanding of who Jesus is has likely been completely toppled, completely shaken up, and any idea of a future where Jesus would become a powerful ruler like the ones that they had known and seen and understood and likely imagined that he would become was crumbling before them. So when Jesus is transfigured, 6 days later, and his clothes turn dazzling white, their hunch that Jesus really is who he says he is confirmed. So when Peter blurts out a suggestion about building dwellings, even though he didn't know what to say because he was terrified, I imagine that he was both scared, because this miraculous and mysterious event really does mean that Jesus will suffer and die, because it confirms that he is who he says he is, and that he was in awe of and gained an even greater and deeper respect for Jesus and his mission and the teachings that he is sharing with the disciples and with the world. And then, of course, as the story goes on, the voice of God confirms all of this is true by naming Jesus as his beloved son and commanding that they listen to him, which both, I imagine, intensifies the fear and the awe, because it also requires something of the disciples. The voice of God in this story reminds them that the transfiguration of Jesus must also serve to transfigure us. Lately, in our national rhetoric, there's been a lot of conversation, a lot of back and forth around the idea of unity and the need for unity. This is especially true after this week, after the Jeep commercial with Bruce Springsteen during the Super Bowl. As a nation, we recognize that there is a deep divide, that there is a clear lack of unity among our people. And yet we have different understandings of what it means to unify and how we get there. But as people of faith in particular, we have a good and earnest desire for people to come together and to get along, because we see that as a part of what Jesus was trying to do, or we see that as a part of how we faithfully follow. Emily P. Freeman, who is an author and the host of a podcast, one of her books and the podcast are both called The Next Right Thing, which is about discernment and decision-making. She shared a reflection in a recent podcast episode about how she's come to understand her relationship between faith and our current moment in time. And after telling a story about how she and her sister had to drive a bright yellow rental car when they traveled across the country to attend the funeral of their young cousin who died in a very tragic accident, she explained the following. "We know that unity is what we need, but as my friend and teacher Deidre Riggs states so plainly, unity is not a party favor. To talk about unity without first acknowledging the reason and the root of the sin of racism in this country feels a bit like driving a bright yellow car in a funeral procession." She continues in saying, "It isn't wrong to long for unity, to trust in God, to point to the reconciliation that Jesus brings. But let's be honest about what that really means. What did it really take? This is my body broken for you. This is my blood shed for you. Do this in the remembrance of me. The pathway to unity is the road to Calvary." Sounds terrifying, doesn't it? 6 days before the transfiguration happened, Jesus warned the disciples that the path to unity, the way of Jesus, always begins with a reckoning, an account of what has been. It begins with something dying. The unity we long for in this nation cannot come if we do not address the system of white supremacy that plagues us, that deepens the divide between us. This is scary for some of us because it means letting go of long-held ideas or beliefs. This is scary for some of us because we don't know if we know the path and what it looks like to walk it. This is scary for some of us because it means we might still hold on to the hope that we could really end white supremacy. And we've given up on that hope long, long ago. And yet, we take on this responsibility because, as Paul writes to the Corinthians, our gospel is not veiled. We are in awe of the power of God. We are amazed at God's promises made known through Jesus. We take on this responsibility because we have a deep respect for the God we proclaim, who is transfigured before us, who walked the road to Calvary for us, who we long to follow along that path. We take on this responsibility because we proclaim Jesus, not because we proclaim ourselves. The Transfiguration is known as the turning point in Jesus's ministry, where he goes from teaching and preaching and healing and focuses instead his energy and mission on the road to Calvary, even though he continues to teach and preach and heal along the way. I pray that it might be a Sunday that we also turn our focus towards the road to Calvary as well. As we begin the season of Lent on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday with Ash Wednesday, we will begin a journey this year as a community where we will learn to rise. In our devotions and our midweek worship, we will learn and pray and confess about the ways that white supremacy culture and the specific characteristics that white supremacy culture is made up of. We will learn and pray and confess about those characteristics and the hold that they have on us as a community. We will walk the road to Calvary because we cannot rise if we do not first die. We cannot unite unless we first reckon with the sin that separates us. So I invite you, along with me and Pastor Rory and Bjorn and Brittany and all of the leadership at Christ the King, along this journey during the season of Lent, as we learn to rise. I pray that we, in this on this walk, on this road, may also be transfigured by both the terror and the awe that will guide us along this path, that will guide us in this season. Amen.
How good, Lord, to be here. Since you bid us leave the mount, come with us to the place.